And a very good afternoon to you. It's 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters Financial Focus right here on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon. And joining me in the shotgun chair there, it's Susan Burns once again.
Yes, it is.
Susan, thanks very much for being here.
Happy Tuesday, Sean.
Happy Tuesday to you as well.
So, today, as you mentioned in the opening, we're going to learn some more about credit and how to manage it and the state of credit, I guess.
Absolutely. Of course, credit a central driver of our broader economy, but also a central driver of our personal finance as well. And always a topic worth visiting and revisiting, because there are so many pitfalls that consumers can fall into.
There are. I kind of like that shotgun image you just used, because credit is a tool, and you have tool belts, so you know you don't want to shoot your foot. But we've got a couple of fellows who've been with us before, but we asked them back because they're local experts, and that's kind of what Midday Matters likes to look for.
That's right, and of course we want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. Joining us in studio now is Joseph Schenkel. He's president and CEO of Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Northeastern Indiana. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Sean. You can call me Joe, by the way.
All right.
That's so formal here.
You can call me Sean. Joining us in studio as well, it's Chris Smith, one of our debt repairmen on the panel as well. Chris, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Let's start with some of the basics. You know, I think a lot of people by now, you know, they know how to, let's say, get a credit card. They know how important their credit score might be in you know, how much they end up paying, say, on a mortgage or on their credit cards. But, you know, a lot of people, even though they hear it over and over, don't know how or why they should check their credit reports. And, Joe, I want to start with you. How important is getting to that document and checking it often?
It's really a key, because there's a lot of bad things that can happen if you don't keep an eye on it. For example, identity theft is one of the things that's really starting to become an issue. People can open credit in your name, and if you don't periodically check that credit report, they might have opened an account, set it up on a fictitious address, and are starting to do things with that ultimately affect your credit report and you don't see. There might be errors in there of things that have happened in the reporting process coming through from your creditors that, you know, again, it wasn't correct. It was just a mistake on their part. And if you don't follow up on that, that's going to stay with you year in and year out and impact that credit report. So you really need to periodically check it, and there are free ways to do that. So, you know, there's no reason not to do it other than a little cost of your time to go in and do those things.
Chris Smith, how often would you recommend to your clients that they check that credit report? I mean, is it once a year, once every few years? I mean, how often do they need to be looking at that document to be sure that everything's in line?
Well, it's interesting, because there are three major credit reporting services. And the law says that they must give you your credit report for free once a year. Now, if you go on the internet, you'll see all kinds of people that'll say they'll do that for you, but they'll charge a fee. So you can go directly to the credit bureau report, the credit reporting agency online. So there are three of them. So I recommend to my clients, every 4 months, you go to a different credit reporting agency, because some have different inputs and they'll have different information.
And these are Equifax, TransUnion, I'm forgetting the third.
Experian,
that's right. So every 4 months, access those companies and check it out.
Right, just go to the first 4 months, do Experian, then go to TransUnion, do the next one after that.
And I think it's a little bit confusing, because we have all of these companies about, which one is right, which one is the one. And I understand you're advocating, you know, make sure you check all three. Are any of these agencies better or worse than the others?
Well, they're not better or worse. They tend to follow some type of industry. Experian may be more avid with car dealerships. TransUnion may be more available for mortgage-backed activities. So it just depends on what line of credit you're looking for as to what credit bureau report you're liable to get picked.
It looks like we have a caller on the line here, and of course, we want you to join our conversation today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. And of course, you can email middaymatters@nipr.fm or get in touch with us via social media. And if you'd like, at least via email and phone, we can keep your anonymity intact today. Let's go to the phones here. We have Ann on the line. Ann, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters. Ann, are you with us? Unfortunately, we've got you there now, Ann. Sorry about that. We had a little trouble. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes. This credit report, which I went in last night and got my free one, it has a lot of information. How do I discern? They've got accounts that have been closed that says, yes, never been late, but good standing. So I'm going to take this information. I want to refinance my mortgage. And so how do I read this that I can be literate with my people I'm going to try to refinance with?
Sure.
It sounds like, Ann, you're kind of looking for the highlight reel, the important things to take to potential lenders.
Well, yes, and my report was 34 pages. So how do I read? You know, it shows how much by month I paid and how many for the last 5 or 10 years on some of these. And it says that this will go till 13, this will go to 14, this will go to 19. Year 2019. So how do I discern what information is proper that we need to follow?
Let's put it to the panel here, and Joe Schenkel will start with you.
Yeah, I would recommend, again, our agency is a nonprofit, and one of the things we do is free counseling for individuals. You could call and set up an appointment with one of our counselors, bring in that credit report, and review it with them. They are the experts. My counselors there, they make sense of all that, of what's important, what's not important. And again, make sure that everything on there is accurate. If there's something that's not accurate, you do want to get that off your record and get it correct. So,
It seems accurate.
Okay. So then it's just a matter of making sense of it. And
yes.
And the other part is we always stress folks to make sure you have a budget and understand that in relation to your use of credit. If you don't have a budget, how do you know how much you want to extend yourself when you have credit issues and especially on purchase sides of the equation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm kind of with Ann. Knowing this was coming up, I went in and got mine. And there are some terms in there that I wasn't familiar with, and Ann mentioned one of them, the closed account, and there's it looks like there's different descriptions of the different accounts. Is there sort of a 101 overview you could give us of typical entries on some of these credit reports?
Well, closed account can happen for a couple of reasons. You can choose to close an account that you might have had. A creditor may choose to close an account because of you aren't their target market anymore,
uh-huh.
Or you may be a problem borrower that you're slow on repaying or have been slow on repaying, and they close that account. So there's a lot of things there that you have to look at the terminology, and again, make sure they reflect the reality of what happened in your life and that those are correct.
Mm-hmm. Chris Smith, I'll put it to you as well. What are some of the more confusing aspects when you look at credit reports that consumers might help clarify for Ann and our other listeners here?
Well, it's interesting because the creditors come in different categories. There are unsecured loans, there are installment agreements, there are secured loans that are not installment agreements. And what a creditor is looking at, Ann, is to see how much you've relied on unsecured credit in the past. Now, that's the most costly credit you can get, and that's the most risky credit that a creditor will extend out.
Unsecured credit being a loan that has no collateral.
That's exactly right. Credit cards, for example, mm-hmm. Unsecured loans department store cards, credit cards, Visa cards, MasterCards, those kinds of things. So if your lender is worried that you've, you know, spent your life on credit card debt, that could be a negative factor in making a loan to you. So you might want to look at your credit bureau report and determine which one of those were unsecured. And I think it'll even say that on their type of loan. And prepare yourself. If that's the case, then you'll want to have a good explanation of that to your lender. The other thing that you could use that credit bureau report is when you do apply, you're going to have an application to fill out, and it's going to ask you for all of your current debt. So they will check what you say versus what they see on your credit bureau report. And if there's discrepancies, that could be a red flag. So be sure and to be honest and use your credit bureau report to help you remember credit card debt that might have slipped your mind.
Another question.
Thanks very much for your call in. We do appreciate it, and we encourage our other listeners to call in 260-452-1185. Sorry, Susan,
yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay, and thanks, Ann. And another aspect, do the credit reports show when you've paid off different loans?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, they will show that it's paid off and when you paid it off. And Joe said that they could close your account at any time for the reasons he said, and also they can close it if you are inactive. If you don't use that account after a while, they'll just close it. Mm-hmm. So it's not to be construed as a negative thing to have a closed account. I will tell listeners out there to be careful about closing accounts without thinking about some of the ramifications. For example, a credit extender will look at the amount of credit that you have available to you and the amount of credit that you're using. And there's a ratio there. The lower the ratio, the better you are. If you close a line of credit, let's say you have a $5,000 line of credit that you never use, so you close that account, that's going to impact your ratio. It's going to make it go up, which is a bad thing. So before you just willy-nilly start closing accounts because of, you know, you get your credit bureau report and say, I don't need that $5,000 line of credit. I never use it. I'm not paying anything for it. I'll get rid of it. Hold on before you do that. And I would suggest talk to one of Joe's counselors because they're very familiar with those ratios.
It's real good to look at that. And then on the flip side of that, also be careful of accepting additional credit limits from creditors. A lot of times they're going to say, well, we want to raise your account, or they automatically raise your account limit to a certain level. That also has an impact on that credit rating. So all those things factor together, and you just have to pay attention, know what the consequences are, and choose the right course of action for yourself.
And in that case, can we say positively that it affects it positively or negatively, one direction or the other?
It any change moves it up and down. So you just have to be aware of what are the formulas there that are in the background. And like I say, it might be right for you to make that move either up or down in a certain way, but it has to be, like I say, right for you at that point in time.
We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll continue our conversation on credit when we get back. We do want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment for our experts, give us a call right now. The number is 260-452-1185, or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264, or you can always get in touch with us via Facebook or on Twitter. We're at Midday Matters. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Tuesday night TV time, tough to tame? Take a taste of tossed jazz salad instead with me, Bob Mayer, from 7 to 9 right here on 89.1 WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Travel Leaders, proud supporter of public broadcasting, featuring Alaskan cruises and European holidays. Travel Leaders, making vacations monumental. Online at travelbetterindiana.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne in fall 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum at www.indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
/12:22 here at 89.1 FM. You're tuned to Midday Matters. Thanks very much for being with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Joining me in studio, of course, it's Susan Burns, and we're talking this hour about your credit, and we want to hear from you today. The number is 260-452-1185. If you have a question or comment, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters, and we'll do our best to get you on the program just as soon as we can. Joining us in studio, of course, our credit repairman for the hour, we have Chris Smith and Joseph Schenkel, and Joe is president and CEO of Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Northeastern Indiana. Guys, we were talking before we went to break here a little bit more about credit reports, and I just wanted to head back to that that issue briefly. We talked about the three main credit reporting agencies. We talked about accessing your free reports on a regular basis. A big part of the discussion, I think, in the last few years as well has been about this company, Fair Isaac. Who also offers, I believe, a credit score. Chris, can you tell us a little bit about the Fair Isaac company?
Well, they've been in the forefront of the credit bureau scoring since, for about 30, 35 years. And their whole program is based upon characteristics. They score different characteristics of a person, where they work, where they live, how many children they have, how long they've been employed, self-employed, so forth and so on. So they've really come a long way in trying to identify those characteristics that are good and those characteristics that are not so good, so a lender can make some kind of informed decision off a piece of paper. They've come up with the credit score, and it ranges from 0 to about 800. Various credit reporting agencies have their own way of determining the characteristics for their credit score. But by and large, it's all about the same. At the end of the day, your credit score is what the creditor is going to rely on before making a decision.
And Joe Schenkel, that does mean that, well, you have a convenient measure of your credit, and lenders do, but there's an awful lot riding on just that one number, even if you know, some of the mistakes you've had are years in the past.
Well, that's true, and that's why it's important to, you know, really monitor that periodically. And you know, if you get a loan, ask the lender to see that file, to see what is your score, because those scores impact, you know, what you're going to be paying in interest, the other terms and conditions of the lending that they might offer to you, the length of the loan. And so you really need to, you know, it's in your best interest to really monitor that and just know where you're going with it.
One of the big questions over credit scores as well, of course, is what is good and what is bad? and I know it's a little more gray than that, but can you give us a general overview of those numbers?
The bar keeps moving. You know, ideally, as close to in the eight, you know, high sevens and 800 is where you want to be, and I think that's the goal to set. Try and get that score as high as you're able to in your lifetime, and that means using credit wisely. I know of folks who said, "I have a crummy credit score. I'm in my later years of my career, and I've paid cash for everything." They've never extended any. They've never had credit cards. They bought their homes on cash, and very modest homes, and so now comes a time when they do need credit and they can't get it. So I always tell folks, you know, establish a line of credit. Get credit cards. Pay them off every month. You know, don't buy more than you can pay. But do use credit. Credit can be your friend, and it's necessary to have.
And that illustrates a great point, Chris Smith, that the length of your credit can be as important. The length of your credit history can be as important as, how well you've taken care of that history.
Definitely. Obviously, the longer you have good credit, the higher your score is going to be. But that's not to say that you couldn't have a high score if you're just getting started out, too. Joe's perfectly correct. Get a credit card, even if it's a $300 limit, and pay it off every month. And that will establish a credit score that starts you in the right direction. The problem that we find with seniors oftentimes is that once they do get that first credit card, then it starts to escalate because the credit bureaus, the credit companies are looking constantly spinning through the cyberspace of credit availability. And when they see a senior and he's just starting to use credit or she's just starting to use credit, those offers will come in by the sackfuls. And I really caution a lot of my elder clients to be very judicious about accepting a lot of credit card offers, because once the first one hits, they'll all just come run right after them.
I have this mental image of buzzards circling over it.
Could be.
Well, in fact, we were talking over the break here about someone you encountered who they started getting those offers, and
they did.
It turned out very poorly in the end.
It did. A grandmother, she was getting credit card offers a lot. And she started to accept them, and one of the cards had a limit of $15,000. Then on top of that, and it seemed kind of coincidental to me, though I couldn't prove it in court, but right about the same time, couple of weeks later, she was starting to get calls, telemarketing calls from fraudulent ministries, and they were asking her for donations and said, well, don't you have a credit card handy? And lo and behold, before you knew it, it was $15,000 was gone. So I encourage in the whole elder care arena, I encourage the children of elder parents to get involved with their parents' financial life, to get power of attorney so they can get a credit bureau report, and to monitor their parents or their parent, to be careful of these fraudulent activities, because a lot of our elders do get caught in these things, and it can be very costly.
We do want to hear from you today. If you have a question about your debt or credit, give us a call. The number, 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. You can email middaymatters@nipr.fm, or you can get in touch with us via social media. And for this hour, if you'd like to have some anonymity extended to your situation, we'll be happy to engage that way. Joe Schenkel, you were going to jump in there.
Well, I was. One of the things that, you know, with the situation Chris described of being taken advantage of, you know, with your credit report, you can lock that down, and you can keep people from doing the automatically scrolling through and seeing who's a good credit risk and these offers coming out to you and the automatic raises in your credit limit. And so by filing the right forms, you can basically put a lock on that. There's two things. You can either stop the offers. That's one option you can have, so you don't see offers. I think it runs for like 5 years before you have to renew it. Mm-hmm. Or you can completely lock your report. Now, I warn people. I said, I had a friend who did that and forgot the passcode to get in and unlock
No.
it when they did need to get that next credit card that they needed to go do something, and they had a hard time unlocking it. It's not that you can't do it, but it's just a lot more effort. So if you do that, put the passcode in the safe place. But it does that locking of that credit report really keeps it secure. And if you have parents that you are working with on their finances, that may be a thing to consider, of locking that down. If they aren't going to need lines of credit or doing changes to their credit, lock it in, and that way nothing bad can happen.
And Joe, how does locking it compare to putting a flag on it? I know people who've had some identity theft experiences and have their credit report has a flag in case any activity happens.
Well, it's just that. If the flag just alerts you to activity.
but the lock prevents creditors from actually seeing anything that's on there and taking any action to issue additional credit. So it's a more of a permanent freeze of your credit at that point in time.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here. We'll continue our conversation on credit and debt when we come back. And remember, we do want to hear from you and hear about your experiences today. If you have a question or perhaps a comment to offer our panelists and listeners, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. We learn the story behind the story to get at the deeper truths that connect us all. I'm Audie Cornish. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Jurors are slated to begin a third day of deliberations in the trial of 16 people accused of hate crimes and hair and beard cutting attacks against their fellow Amish in Ohio. The jury started deliberations last Thursday morning. They took the weekend off and are to resume on Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Cleveland. The members of a breakaway Amish settlement are accused of hate crimes and what federal prosecutors say were attacks motivated by religious differences. They say the defendants cut off Amish men's beards and women's hair because the hair carries spiritual significance in their faith. Defense attorneys acknowledge that the hair cutting took place but contend that prosecutors are overreacting by calling them hate crimes. All the defendants could face lengthy prison terms if convicted. Rose Holman Institute of Technology has hired an executive search firm to help in selecting a new president. WBOI Sean Beter has the story.
The university is seeking to replace Matt Branham, who died in April at age 57. Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer Robert Coons has been serving as interim president in the meantime. The school has hired Heidrick and Struggles, Inc. to assist as the Western Indiana School seeks to hire the 15th president in its history. Rose Holman trustee Bill Schindel says the school chose that search firm because it has a track record in both academic and industrial leadership searches. Rose Holman's campus in Terre Haute is home to about 1,900 undergraduate students and 100 graduate students majoring in engineering, science, or mathematics. For WBOI News, I'm Sean Beter.
Children with severe mental illnesses will be able to get state-funded services without their parents admitting neglect charges under a plan from Indiana's troubled Department of Child Services. The agency said Monday the plan allows families, schools, judges, probation officers, and others to contact community mental health centers to coordinate care for such children. DCS will roll out the program in the Lawrenceburg area, evaluate it after 2 months, then expand it statewide. DCS has agreed to fund the services for children whose families are not eligible for Medicaid or whose private insurance won't cover the costs. DCS says it expects the program to cost $11 million through next June 30th and will need the General Assembly to authorize more money for the program to continue beyond then. Senator Richard Lugar says he will not campaign for the man who vanquished him in May's Republican primary. Lugar said Monday that he would not actively support Republican Senate candidate Richard Murdoch on the campaign trail. The six-term senator had previously left the question unanswered, but he raised eyebrows in July when he introduced Murdoch to Senate Republicans at a weekly lunch. Murdoch is in a tight race with Democrat Joe Donnelly for Indiana's open Senate seat. Senate Republicans and Democrats are going on air in Indiana Tuesday with new ads, and outside groups are spending heavily on both sides. Polls have shown a surprisingly close race for what would have been a safe Republican seat had Lugar won re-election. And now back to your host for Midday Matters, Sean Beter.
It's 12:37. You're tuned to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. This, of course, the Financial Focus edition of our program, and that means Susan Burns is in studio with me for this hour. And during this program, we're talking about debt and credit. And we do want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment for Chris Smith or Joe Schenkel, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We'll do our best to get you on the program during the last 20 minutes of the show today. We do have a caller on the line, so let's go to Donna. Donna, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Working with a family who has very poor credit history and a credit rating, and they're looking to purchase a home. And I think we're going to help them out a little bit, but we are trying to find a way to enable them to take over after they get established. So I was wondering if there was like a website with some template, a government or private website that would have the paperwork that we could use that they could follow to help educate them and take over getting themselves out of debt.
And Joe Schenkel, we'll start with you there.
Well, I guess I'm a little perplexed as to getting them out of debt. So they currently have additional debt besides the housing. Is that correct?
They have been renting.
Okay.
And that now they're looking to buy a home, and they all have a credit rating maybe around 470, and they have outstanding debts and bills now of around 7,000 or 8,000.
Okay. One of the things that our agency works real well with is trying to educate folks as to how to balance a budget and to find where maybe the excesses are in the budget or things that they can pare back, because the goal there is to make sure for any credit rating, it's paying on time as agreed. So if you have credit card debt, if you're making that minimum monthly payment, that can be a problem, though, is because your debt doesn't go away if you're making that minimum monthly payment, just very ever so slowly, and it takes decades literally to pay that off. So you want to accelerate paying back that debt and getting that credit ratios that Chris talked about high enough that it's going to improve your credit score, and a housing lender is then going to seriously consider you for a loan. The other piece there is not only paying back the debt, but within that budget that we help the clients build, you're going to have to build up some sort of reserve accounts and maybe a deposit account for a down payment on that home. So those are all issues that fit into this equation of ultimately purchasing a home. And then whatever home you purchase, you have to make sure that it's affordable for you, because the purchase price of the home is great, and that mortgage and the interest and the insurance on it. But you have to keep in mind, I always tell people, I can't guarantee what's going to happen, but something during the year, if you own a home, the washing machine, the dishwasher, the refrigerator, a baseball through the window, one of those things happens in life. And so you have to have that little emergency fund build up along with those other savings funds, along with paying back the debt. So those are all pieces that again, our counselors at Consumer Credit Counseling help folks with.
Well, is there a counseling system for each, I guess, county or area of the state then? Because that's really what I'm looking for. I think we are going to go ahead and as I don't want to say an enabler, but a helper to them at present, buy the house that would be a good investment for them, and that there would not be potential expenses of something breaking down or a major problem of roofing or basement walls or anything. So we're looking at getting a house that's affordable for them, and then going through a land contract that would have also a payment system built in for them, or a payment system built in and a savings account built in.
Right. There's a lot of great groups in Northeast Indiana. I point to the Habitat movement. I know they do a lot of work with, again, educating potential homeowners. And home ownership is more than just being able to afford that payment. It's if you've never owned a home, of knowing what do you have to do upkeep-wise, and how do you mm-hmm. take care of a home. go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, they're really hesitant to get involved. They're very angry at present because they have tried that with Habitat and it hasn't worked out because they do have too big of an income. And they've tried going to place, they've tried and they're just very angry right now. So I'm just acting as a resource for them and trying to go about it a little more gently rather than sometimes the brunt force that's used with financial institutions. So I was just wondering if there is some paperwork that I could follow or to help educate them from temp.
Well, again, our agency, our counselors can help with that to look at the situation and again, properly make sure that they have a grip on their budget and their expenses. I know Pathfinders down in Huntington County and also up here in Allen County work on housing issues with individuals. There's the Fort Wayne Urban League does some housing counseling. So there's various ones out in Whitley County. I mentioned Habitat. They do housing counseling also out there. So.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll just go back to some of those resources and see if they'll be more amenable to reapproaching them now.
But again, I'm always welcome to folks calling the Consumer Credit Counseling. we're there to help.
Northeastern Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah. And Joe, are there thinking of like she mentioned online and website, are there sort of some gurus or books or programs out there too? I'm thinking some of the churches have some activities along those lines.
Well, I know a lot of the churches use the Financial Peace University, Dave Ramsey, and that, and our agency is trying to offer out to the congregation is a much lower cost option. It's a little bit less time, a lot less money. We've had a hard time just getting any congregation to take us up on it. I was talking to my counselor. I said, I'm at a point where the first one who comes along, I'm going to offer the free session for all the books and the instructor manual just so they take it up and we get some reputation going with it.
Yeah.
There's other good, a lot of good things out on the web. Indiana Housing Authority, search that and look at the housing things under NeighborWorks, which is a federal program, and HUD. There's a lot of good housing information there. So you just have to make sure that if anybody asks you to pay to help with your housing issues, run away as fast as you can and run to a source like ourselves. Like I said, we do housing counseling where we can direct you in the right to the right parties who will do it for free because our housing is paid for by federal grants and state grants. And so, again, it's a great deal for, you know, folks in Northeast Indiana who need that help because there's no obligation other than your cost to come in and see us and you know, take a little action on your part.
Yeah. All right. Well, Donna, we appreciate your call. Great question and very good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good day. We do want to hear from you in the last 15 minutes of our program today. The number with your question or comment is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. And it looks like we do have a Facebook question here from Janet. Janet says, how can you best protect the credit history of a minor? I know there are cases of preschoolers having fraudulent charges and accounts thanks to identity theft. What can we do to protect our kids? And this seems like a really tricky question. I mean, we've often heard those stories of, you know, credit accounts or credit cards being opened in the name of a dog or
something like that.
I
know a dog who gets applications regularly, and he's very responsible.
Well, okay, I'm glad. Gentlemen, I mean, this does seem like a particularly tricky topic.
It's really very appropriate because a lot of our kids go online and they do, you know, not bad things, but they enroll in a variety of different games and programs. My 11-year-old niece is involved with all kinds of fun, cartoonish kind of things. But they do oftentimes ask for their name, address, their age, and it's in cyberspace. It's available to anybody who wants to figure out a way to hack into it. Now, oftentimes they will get credit card invitations in the mail. So do scrutinize the mail that you get in your kids' names because it could be very well be for a credit card that You know, somehow or other, these people get these names. They change the birth dates around to make them look like they're over 18, and then they send out solicitations. So be careful and make sure you monitor what your children are doing on the web. I mean, that's a whole another a day on that one.
And Janet adds in her post, can you do a credit freeze or something like that to keep identity thieves away from those accounts? Earlier on in the program, of course, we talked about putting a hold on your...
You can do that. One of the things that we use, our national organizations connected us with a group called All Clear ID, and you can actually register your minors, and they will log that into their database, and they periodically scan then for any inappropriate activity, because it's something that is happening out there where they will grab a social security number and a name. And because typically nobody's monitoring a minor's credit report, all sorts of bad things can happen. And then when they turn 18 or so and go to get that first credit card or car loan or whatever it may be, they find out there's horrendous things out there, and then you have a mess to clean up.
Yeah. We're going to take just a quick break, and then we'll finish the conversation on today's Midday Matters. We do want to hear from you today, though. If you have a question or comment for Chris Smith or Joe Schenkel, give us a call. The number 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Gaith Abdul-Ahad talks about traveling with Syrian rebel fighters for his new PBS Frontline documentary. He says the rebels don't have enough helmets, flak jackets, or experience.
In Syria, you meet someone in the morning and they die in the end of the day. As one of the officers was saying, the only thing we have plenty of is men.
Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lutheran Hospital, providing procedures for heart failure patients that keep their treatment in Fort Wayne, close to home. Information at lutheranhealth.net. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lake City Bank, offering a wide range of financial investment and trust services for individuals, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations through the Lake City Bank Wealth Advisory Group. More information available at lakecitybank.com.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters Financial Focus on 89.1 FM. Today we're talking about debt and credit with Joe Schenkel, president of the Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Northeastern Indiana, and our debt repairman, Chris Smith. And we do want to hear from you in the last few minutes of the program today. Number 260-452-1185. Chris, over the break we were talking a bit about how kind of an odd borrowing scheme that gets people into trouble. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's borrowing from the federal government. If you own your own business and you collect payroll taxes from your employees, you are responsible to write a check to the Internal Revenue Service right away. You're supposed to take the money from the employees and give it to the government, and that's how employee taxes work. Unfortunately, in this economy, some of our business owners have taken a different approach, a cheaper way. They're taking those payroll taxes from their employees, and unfortunately, they are not paying them back to the Treasury. And it starts off innocently enough. You know, I just need a quick short-term loan. I'll do it just this one quarter, and I'll catch up next quarter. And then the next quarter comes along and so forth, and it never happens for years. So that's a really scary thing to do, because if that business goes out of business, those employees never had those taxes paid back into their Social Security accounts, so they are suffering and when they decide to retire. So I urge any business owner not to take that that quick fix approach, because in the long run it'll be very costly, and to go to more normal ways of borrowing money than through the Treasury.
And of course, the IRS has a long reach, so to speak.
So to speak.
looks like we have a caller on the line here. Let's go to Susie. Susie, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your program, your financial program, and your daily noon program.
Appreciate you
being there and your voices.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. Go ahead, please.
I would like three little subjects. Number one, I joined you late today. My apologies if you've covered this, but are you allowed to speak about the... Is it still a good rule of thumb to... It used to be 2.5 times your annual income is what you were advised to not go over for the purchase of a home. Number two, the banks talk about income debt ratio. Do you know what, is there a rule of thumb to keep your income debt ratio under? And number three, further information on alerting young people about how parents and relatives will use a young child's social security number, and then the child finds they have a bad record when they go out into the world on their own. Those three items, quickly cover if you don't mind.
Absolutely, and we've touched a bit on each of these, but I think the third question here about protecting young folks, we talked about lenders preying on minors.
I heard that part, lenders, but I find relatives do it. It's absolutely amazing how by the time they're teenagers, the relatives have destroyed the Social Security card and credit report. So is it still 2.5 times your annual income for investing in a house?
Well, let's put that to the panel here, Joe or Chris. Any rules on how much debt to take on for home ownership?
Well, that's a very interesting, timely question. I think 2 weeks ago in the Sunday paper, there's an article about the percent of income being very high that homeowners were their home payment to their total. Income, and it was it kind of surprised me because it got out of range, and typically it's around 35%. Now, I think some of the old rules of thumb have changed.
I'll stop right there. 35% of their annual income should go towards the mortgage payment. Is that what you're saying?
Maximum, but listen to what else I have to say here. Is that the rules have changed in that it depends on what other borrowings you have. So if you have no other debt and your cars are paid off, your credit cards are paid off, the lender is going to give you more tolerance there to pay towards the home versus a different situation. So every lender has their standards. We talked about earlier about a credit score. What's a good credit score? Well, it's kind of like buying and selling. It's whatever that lender is comfortable in doing. And at various times in that lenders.
So I want to look at it from the investor's viewpoint, the person that's buying the home. I mean, right now, right, they may have less than 35% versus debt involvement over their total income, but they buy the house, and they're going to buy a car, then they're going to buy a riding lawnmower, then they're going to buy a boat, and then they're really overdone.
Well, yeah. And again, that deals with self-control. I always talk about...
bottom line for the investor's point of view.
Well,
the young people, a 20-year-old, how much should they invest of their annual income?
And I think part of that, there is no exact answer. And I think the answer is they need to sit with a financial counselor and probably, you know, talk it through. And that counselor could be your parents, a trusted relative.
Well, when you were younger, did you ever hear about the 2.5 times your income is what you should not pay, go over to pay for a house?
That was kind of a good rule of thumb, but keep in mind back then, housing values were increasing, and then all of a sudden in the last couple of years we've seen some severe decreases in value. So does it make sense to do that today? I don't know. It's a personal answer.
Okay, then let's go on to the bank's rule of thumb for how much they'll loan you versus your debt ratio versus your income.
And Chris Smith, any thoughts on this? And Susie, I'm sorry, we only have a few.
I know you're close. That's why I was talking quickly. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate your subject matter. Bye-bye.
We appreciate your call here, Susie. And let's get to that point briefly. Chris Smith, any thoughts on the bank's perspective on an income to debt ratio?
You know, it's interesting. It's made kind of a big switch. When I was in banking 25 years ago, it was based upon income. It was based upon debt ratio, 35%, 40% of your annual income. But now the banks are putting much more emphasis on the property itself. It really doesn't make any difference if your debt ratio is superb, if the piece of property you're buying is in a bad situation, if it's got mold, if it's a structurally deficient. I mean, the banks are looking much closer at the appraisals than they ever did before, as opposed to the income situation.
It looks like we have one more caller here. Just 2 minutes in the program. We'll try to get Lauren in. Lauren, please be brief. We just have a few moments left in the program.
Okay, can do. Hi, thank you for having me. I have a question about private education debt. I went to school years ago and started a culinary program, took out private education loans. I did not finish that program. And have since gone back to college and have federally funded loans for that degree as well. With the private education loans, they have an extremely high interest rate at this point, and my principal went from about $12,000 to about $40,000 now. And so I don't know what to do about that, if there are options for private education debt programs to offer some relief from those.
Is that with a bank?
No, it's through Sallie Mae.
Sallie Mae. Okay. Yes. Sallie Mae does offer a refinance ability.
Okay.
They offer a refinancing option. They also offer a forbearance option.
Yeah, the forbearance. I've been in forbearance or deferment while I was in school, and okay. That is when my principal, all of the interest capitalized.
Right.
And so that's where
you can
where
you your 6% interest rate or something that near that
13.
13%. Yes. Okay, you can get it to 6.
Okay.
So definitely go into Sallie Mae's website and just follow the links to refinancing. And several of my clients have been really happy with that.
Okay, excellent.
And gentlemen, would you recommend she talk to a counselor or advisor before taking this step, or is it something she can pursue on her own?
Well, she can pursue it on her own, but I would definitely encourage her to see consumer counseling. Because they can put a budget together that will just make it all kind of fit together.
Sure.
It's a cohesive budget because we're going to take all the pieces, not just the student loan.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Lauren, thank you, and very good luck to you. Gentlemen, it looks like we've reached the end of another wonderful program. I want to thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
And I know there's much more to touch on. Probably could do a whole show on student debt, and we'll get to that in the near future. Yeah. Susan, thank you very much for being here as well.
Thanks, Sean.
I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOI Fort Wayne, and WBKE North Manchester. Have a great day.